All right, he said, she said, we are wrapping up the series today, and as you can tell, I'm joined today by a lovely, lovely lady, and why don't you welcome my wife, Dani, to the stage, please. Help her out. Thank you. Thank you. She was nervous, and then first hour, I think she, are you still nervous?
No. It was fun. I was nervous about being on stage, but it's really neat to see how God used the questions that you had to spark some conversation for us. You know, we weren't just eating pizza and watching TV together. No, I'm just kidding. But it was neat to go through the questions that you guys submitted, and we're excited about what God's going to do through that today.
Yeah, you guys, you did. We picked the best 10, or not really the best 10. We kind of combined some questions, try to get the 10 that will give us the broadest thing. But we also, if you have questions today that spark up as we're talking, we're very high tech. You can actually text in your question. You have permission to text today. So, you know, you can if you have any questions, text them to the number's going to be on the screen the whole time. You can text them in, and we'll throw them up if we get a chance. But I think today's going to be fun because we've been talking about this for 5 weeks, and it's been all me talking, and, you know, she's better than me anyway. But you guys had these questions, so we're going to try to answer them, try to help you kind of work through some of the stuff. And so rather than talk about the questions, I'll just go ahead and start them. The number one question we get, that doesn't mean number one, it means the first. The first question, I should just start. First question. How do you base your marriage on Christ when one spouse isn't a Christ follower? It's a very common question for us. It's a very common question pretty much for church in general. A lot of times you'll have one spouse that either went into the marriage already believing in Christ, or they get married and then one believes in Christ and the other doesn't. And, you know, the question is, what do we do now? How do we do this? Because I've been preaching for 5 weeks that the way your marriage is going to work is for both of you to be submitting to Christ. So if one of you's not doing it, how is that supposed to work? And I'm not going to lie to you today. It is going to be difficult if one of you is married. If one of you is married, obviously you're both married. If one of you has a relationship with Christ and the other doesn't, it'll be difficult. It will be more difficult than not. But the cool thing is the Bible, because it's so practical, actually talks about this issue. Paul and Peter, in separate times in the New Testament, answer this question. And basically the answer they give is this. They say, to the spouse that believes in Christ, they say, everything we've said to you about how to love your spouse is still on the table. Just because they're not a Christian doesn't mean you're off the hook. You are still to love them like we've taught. You're still to try to make Christ the center of your marriage. You are still, husbands, to love your wives as Christ loved the church. Wives, you are still to submit and respect and honor your husbands. None of that is off the table. And what they say is, they say, well, actually, as you're doing that, as you are living your life in front of your spouse, and as you are showing how the God of the universe is changing you, they believe that God will use that to in turn transform your spouse. So, the way you base your marriage on Christ when one spouse isn't a Christ follower is you base your life on Christ, and you spend every minute you can praying for them that Christ will speak to their heart. And that's how you do it. It's not easy. I wouldn't recommend it, if I'm just being quite honest. The Bible's pretty clear that believers are supposed to marry believers. So if you're in a dating relationship right now, and you're a Christian, and the person you're dating is not, pretty good indication you should end that relationship. I'm not a big fan of missionary dating, you know. Oh, dude, I'm just dating to lead her to Jesus. No, you're not. No, you're not. Not at all. But again, if you're already married, that it's a completely different situation. And so do what you can and pray for them. I know you want to add some stuff.
Yeah, I think that something that's unique to this situation is if God has come into your life and he's radically changed it, if you have seen, you know, life change and you're like, oh, wow, this is awesome. You just want to shake anybody around you and say, hello, especially someone that you love if it's your spouse. But I think a caution, you know, making sure that you're not arguing with, you're never going to convince them. You're never going to argue enough points that what you've experienced is real and life-changing. When God moves in your life, the fruit from that, the results of how you love others, is going to speak way more than any argument that you could have. which is just...
Yeah, don't debate with your spouse.
Or anyone,
yeah. Don't debate with Jesus about Jesus. It's not going to work.
He's going to win every time, but he's not going to win through your...
Yeah, Jesus doesn't need you to debate for him. He can prove himself true and right. But seriously, and I'm going to just, you know, I see this way more than the opposite. Wives, a lot of times, they fall in love with Jesus. And so they start coming to church, they bring their kids to church, and they want the husband to come to church. But what ends up happening is when they get home, instead of, this is what happened at church today, it was awesome, it's, I can't believe you didn't come, you missed it, you stink, and you kind of dog them out, you know. Or you know, maybe you have a husband who has questions, and you try to engage his questions and debate with him. Well, that's just a back, it's just not going to work, it's just not going to work. No debating and no nagging. All right, those are my two things I'd say. Just pray for them every day and love them, and let Jesus shine through you. That's the best advice we could give you in that arena. All right, let's keep moving. Next question. They only get easier. After drifting apart emotionally and dealing with trust issues, how do we fall in love with each other again? The love we had when we were first married. This is one we've gotten a good bit of, and this is one we've kind of talked about the whole series, about how do we get back what we had. You know, we've been talking about God's plan, God's design for marriage, and you know, a lot of times you hear it and you say, well, that sounds fun, but I'm not there. Well, I have a couple of things to say on that, but number one, and I was actually talking to somebody about this in the hallway between services, and they made a good point, but both spouses have to answer one question. I'm sorry, two questions. One, they have to say, can God heal my marriage? Yes or no? What do you think? Can God heal it? And then number two, which is equally important, do I want him to heal my marriage? Because you can think God can heal it all day, but if you don't want him to, it's probably not going to happen. And what I mean by that is, some of us have gotten so accustomed to the fighting we've had, especially if you're the spouse that was sinned against, if the offense was on you, and you've kind of gotten used to lording that over them and making them feel nasty about it, you've got to decide, do I want that to go away? Because it's got to, by the way, if you want your marriage to be healed. So you got to say, can God heal it, and do I want him to? And as you pray about that and talk about it together, once the answer to both those questions is yes, then you can begin. Now, the answer, one of you could have that answer, and you can be praying like crazy for the other one. But you both got to be at that place where you think that God can heal it and you want him to heal it. But now, once that happens, I encourage you to do some stuff we've been talking about, you know, talk to each other. I believe you should be in church together so that you can experience the things of God together, because you want to make God the center of your marriage, like we've been talking about. You got to be realistic. You got to take it slow. You got to understand changes aren't going to happen overnight. You got to praise the little changes as things come back together. And quite honestly, what I would say is you should probably seek a professional to help you. And that doesn't mean a professional minister. That means a professional counselor. And, you know, a lot of times some guys are like, whoa, 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 counseling. I'm not going to counseling. Well, you're dumb. You should go. Counseling is a healthy, it's a good thing, especially biblically based counseling. You need it because sometimes you're going to have stuff going on in your life you can't unwrap all by yourself. You need a disinterested third party to just help you navigate the minutiae. Because again, if you think God can heal your marriage and you're wanting to do it, there should be nothing stopping you. There should be nothing stopping you from taking that step. Because we know the God of the universe, he wants to do it, he will do it. But sometimes it's going to take some more help, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, and I think most often...
Bad. She doesn't need professional help. That's not what I meant.
Sometimes. But when I meet with women, and we're often talking about the dynamics of their marriage, you know, the first thing they'll say is, oh, no, he won't go to counseling. And guys, that does not mean you're a wimp to go to counseling. It means you love your spouse enough to say, I'm not worried about me. If we have a problem, we're going to go find a way to fix this.
Amen.
So, you know, that's number one thing. If you're sitting here and you're like, oh, yeah, my wife's been, you know, telling me that we need to go get some counseling, it's healthy. It's good. I've often said, you know, when people go to get married, take a chunk of the money you're going to spend on the wedding, even if you're in a healthy, amazing relationship, and put it towards counseling, because you can always do things to cultivate and make your relationship better.
That's not an indictment on our first year of marriage, by the way.
No, I said it was our engagement.
Oh, yeah. We should have had counseling in our engagement.
Yeah, we did, actually. It's what kind of got us through it.
Yeah, she's right. We did.
But yeah, I think that, you know, take the money you were going to spend on those shoes you're going to wear at one time, put it towards going to talk to someone about the roles you're going to have in your marriage. And I think one other thing that really helps us when we get in those ruts, because you always do, I think after our second son was born, we have three boys, after John was born, we looked at each other like, we never see each other. This is just wheels off. So we started dating again. It's really fun. And it doesn't, he was just graduating from seminary. We had no money. Our dating meant we rented a movie, probably still at Blockbuster then, and sat at home, you know, but date again. And really, sometimes I know we would date and we'd just sit there and go, date, you know, we're trying to spend time together and have nothing to talk about. And one of the things, and actually Trey was the one who did it first, we started recollecting how we met. And it was so much fun to sit there and think about, oh yeah, I remember when you came to my house and I was, you know, it was just really fun. So do that. Talk about how you felt and what people were, you know, oh yeah, I remember my friend said, oh, you could never, you know, lots of different
things. My friend
said
I could never get her, is what she was saying.
No, I didn't want to say.
They did. They did.
That's not what I was
they
saying.
Did.
At all.
They did. No. My friends were like, that's never happening, dude. Give it up.
No. But anyway, it's really fun. So if you're like, okay, great, you want me to go on a date with someone that I feel like is just my roommate, you know, think of things that you want to talk about and how you met and how you fell in love. It's really fun to think.
Yeah. I mean, if you've been around Wellspring a while, you've heard me talk about the importance of remembering. I talk about it a lot. God wants us to remember. It's the best way to know God's going to work in the future if you sit there and focus on what he's done in the past. Well, the same thing works for your spouse. You know, if you don't have that feeling anymore, think back to the last time you did. Think about the last really sweet thing, wives, he did for you. Think about it and reflect on it. And before you know it, you'll feel all warm and fuzzy again. Sit down and talk about how you got engaged. Tell the story. Ask about, how did you plan that? So and so. Talk about your wedding, unless it was awful. Then don't talk about your wedding. Only talk about happy things. But you're going to hear me a lot today. The answer is going to be communication. Talk to each other. Openly and honestly. Share with each other what's going on. And one only thing I'd say real quick about counseling. Counseling's great, blah, blah, but I want to add this. Until the answer to both those questions is yes, until you and your spouse both say, yes, God can heal it, and yes, I want to heal it, save your money. Mm-hmm. Because what will end up happening is you'll think the counseling's bad, and it's not the counseling, it's the people being counseled. Because it only works if you want it to. It only works if you're willing to put in. So, ladies, I know you think you're doing right by dragging your husband to counseling. Don't. Don't pray for him. Pray for him and keep praying and keep praying and keep loving. Keep loving and keep not letting go, even when you think you want to, and just beg the God of the universe to bust his heart wide open. Because if you want real change, it's the only thing that's going to work. All right, let's keep going. Yeah. All right, next one. Like I said, these just get more and more comfortable. What do I do if I don't enjoy sex anymore? How can I make this a better part of our marriage? This is important. This is a real question for married couples, as I've taught about. And God designed this as a gift for married couples. It's supposed to be for married couples. And I will just say this, and I'll say it as softly as I can. If you really don't enjoy it, there is something wrong. I don't know what it is. There's something wrong. And I encourage you to get it fixed. I'm just kidding. No. No, but there's something wrong. And see, in a marriage, that's why communication is so important. You've got to be able to talk about it. You've got to be able to discuss with your spouse, hey, maybe I did before, this used to be fun for me. It's not anymore. And you have to be able to talk about why. I know for some of you, that gives you a panic attack, the sheer thought of discussing that with your spouse, especially if it's a matter of, you know, like, preference or opinion or whatever. Oh, this is awful. But I'm pushing through because I love you. You need help. I wish I had my sunglasses again. But here's the deal. We just got through reading an entire book, Song of Solomon, all right? And we've all kind of been uncomfortable because that book is very graphic and it's very frank in its discussion of this issue. And there's a reason I believe God wrote it that way. It's to free us, especially, I'm sorry, married ladies. You have been told that it is not right for you to think about sex or for you to discuss it with your husband. And I'm trying to tell you, the reason God's book is so frank and so graphic because it wants to free you up to be able to have a conversation with your husband. To be able to say to him what you do and do not prefer. Anytime you want to jump in, just go right ahead.
No, we've gone through these questions a few times, and every time I'm like, I have nothing.
Yeah, she has nothing to add to this one. But that's one side of it. Seriously. If you don't, and here's why it's so important, guys, because the Bible talks about as that intimacy diminishes in a marriage, the door to temptation opens wide up. It does. We talk about this more and more. It just does. And so if there's a problem, you've got to be open and you've got to talk about it. Husbands, you've got to create an environment where your wife feels safe enough to come to you and talk about this. And say, hey, we got to talk about this. You just do. You just do. Man, you got to man up. You got to take it. That's why the Bible talks about you are her shade. You are her protection. If she does not feel safe enough to talk to you about this, what else is she not talking to you about? And who is she going to go talk to her about? And then what's going to happen when she goes and talks to them about it? Now, number two, this could be an issue outside the bedroom as well. Like we talked about, what happens inside the bedroom is greatly connected to what happens outside the bedroom. Are they feeling love, support, safety, and security? Husbands, are you feeling adored and respected? If that's not right, what happens inside the bedroom is not going to be right also. But you've got to discuss it. That is the only way to get through this stuff, is to sit down and have honest conversations about these types of issues. And I'm a little uncomfortable, so we're going to try to keep moving. All right?
Yeah, I had nothing.
Yeah, she really. She's like, I'm not going to answer that question. Let's keep going. How do I honor and submit to my husband when I know he is wrong? How do I honor and submit to my husband? Because we're called to honor, we're called to submit. How do we do it when I know he's wrong? I'm going to let Danny handle this one. And it's a totally hypothetical answer because we don't have experience on this issue. But she's gonna run with it.
But not often. No. Yeah.
I was wrong twice, okay? Yesterday.
When I read this question, you know, immediately I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like the way it sounds when I answer, but yes. Are you supposed to submit to your husband even when he's wrong? Yes. But it's not as bad as you think. So let me kind of break down some stuff for you. First is the word submit. You know, I feel like society puts such a bad spin on that word. You know, it leads you to believe as a woman that that you're going to be walked all over, that you're not intelligent, and nobody wants to be a stupid doormat. But that is not at all what it means. It just means that you respect and love your husband enough to let him play his role in your marriage. And it means that you get to pray for him and follow his lead. Now, let me be very clear, because we've already talked about how a lot of us might be in a relationship, in a marriage, where your husband isn't a Christ follower.
Well, not a lot of us. I love Jesus.
Yeah, thank goodness. But no, a lot of you guys, or a lot of people, anyway, would be in a relationship where your husband isn't a Christ follower. His authority stops where God's authority starts. So in other words, if your husband is leading you to do something that is harmful to you, that is sin, that is going to cause you heartache and not be aligned with God's will, then you don't submit to him in that area.
Right. I mean, that's purely biblical. Yeah. Romans 13, Paul writes to the people of Rome, the citizens of Rome, the Christians in Rome, and he says, oh, by the way, submit to the Roman government. Pay them taxes, obey the laws. Okay? And at the time, the Roman government was persecuting Christians. They would soon begin killing them. And so how can God say obey the authority, and then the authority is killing Christians? Well, it's very simple. You obey the authority until they stop killing Christians. I mean, but you don't help kill Christians. But because they're killing Christians, doesn't mean you stop obeying the authority. Does that make sense? I kind of garbled that. God is always at work in authority. Authority is never going to be perfect. And your job is to submit to that authority until that authority wants you to go outside to sin against God. And then you don't. It's really crucial to get, because unfortunately, husbands, because we're not good people, some of us, we hear this while our wives have to submit to us. And we kind of let that be a power trip. And we kind of let that lead us to do some, maybe even like into emotional abuse, things like that. And you have crossed a line there. And no, she is not supposed to submit to you in that area. But this is the reverse. Because your husband sins, because your husband makes mistakes, does not mean you get to stop submitting in the other areas. Does that make sense? You have to pray about it. You have to be really in line with God. But as long as your husband isn't making it, like if he's saying, you know, if his decision is to, we're going to take a new job, that's not a sin issue. That's a, all right, I love you, and I'm going to pray for you, and I'm going to submit to you because God has put you in authority. Because that's the thing. It's trusting in God, not your husband. It's trusting that God is working through that authority. God was working through the Roman Empire when they were persecuting Christians. We didn't know it at the time, obviously, but God was at work in that. God is always at work in authority. And so I just want to make that clear, because sometimes people can get bogged down in, well, do I submit to that? Do I submit to that? And again, husbands, just don't be wrong a lot. It makes it a lot easier. You know, just get on your face before God, pray, and say, hey, God, love through me. Help me love my life like I love the church. It'll be a lot easier for her to submit to you. You'll still make mistakes. But if you're on your face before God, and she knows you've got her best interest at heart, it's a lot easier for her to submit to you. So, you know, just make this easy on them. Don't make it hard for them to submit. Don't make them have to ask this question. Anyway.
Yeah, and it's hard because even, you know, as you answer that question, she really just said yes. Even if I know that this might be a mistake, she said, yeah, I should submit to him. That's just not right. You know, I think part of the hard part with submit is the heart behind it. Yes, if you are saying, oh, man, you really mean that the church and those people and God says I have to do what he says, again, you're not a doormat. But if your heart is, I don't respect him, I don't trust him, then it's going to be...
Yeah, it's a bigger issue.
Yeah, it is. And it's going to be really hard for you to willingly say, you know what, honey, sure, I'll move to Myrtle Beach, where we know two people, and start a brand new church that God told you to do. You know?
It could happen, folks.
Yeah, you know? And now I think about, what if I had only been thinking about how it would affect me and what that meant for me? No. Again, Trey was on, I knew, he was praying, he was seeking, he was on his face before God, asking him, really, is this really what you want our family to do? And so it made it a lot easier for me to submit to him. But just because it doesn't make sense to you at the time, or you're only thinking, what is this going to cost me if he's wrong, it doesn't cancel out what God's trying to do through it.
So. Yeah, you're great, all right.
That was the hardest question. In the last hour, I was like, what did I just say?
Yeah, she's never done this twice before, so she's having to remember, what did I say last hour?
It was a little clearer.
What did I say this hour? Yeah, it's fine. You're doing amazing. You really are.
Thank you.
You're the best.
Isn't he so sweet?
Yeah, thank you. I mean it. So, all right, next question. This is one we got a lot of versions of this question. What if I've been divorced, but now I'm remarried? Have I missed God's blessing? I mean, we live in Myrtle Beach, the divorce capital of the world. It happens a lot. And unfortunately, we've probably been taught, or some of us are wired to think, you know, God's kind of a one-and-done kind of guy. And, you know, well, if I've been divorced, then I've missed it. I've blown my chance with God. Well, the beautiful thing about the God of the Bible that I actually read and spend time talking to on a daily basis is he's a loving God. He's a forgiving God. He's a God of hope. He's a God of redemption. And I think he would say to you today, if it's your first marriage, if it's your fifth marriage, I think the first thing he would say is, okay, calm down. Let's make this your last marriage. All right? That's the first thing he'd say. You know, we can't go back and undo the past. We can't do it. And my word talks all about how I can remove sin. I can forgive it. I remove it as far as the east is from the west. You don't need to live in guilt. You don't need to live in shame. So let's focus right now. Whatever marriage you're in, whatever number it is, let's make it the last one. All right? And that starts what we talked about last week. Place a seal over your heart. Take the divorce card off the table. And make God the center of your marriage. And move forward. So the first question, have you blown it if you've been divorced? No. Now, I want to be honest with you. If you are on your second, third, fourth, fifth marriage, you do need to know. It is going to be more difficult for you. And that is because you are going to have some baggage that other people don't have. You just are. You're bringing into this covenant relationship other relationships, other ideas. You're going to have to deal with jealousies over what's happened in the past. You're going to have to deal with some things. But does that mean it's impossible? Absolutely not. Do I believe God can 100% bless your marriage and it can grow and it can be right in line with what we talked about for the past 5 weeks? Absolutely. 100%. There is hope for that. But you need to know that you're going to have to, again, communicate. You're going to have to be honest. And again, I would say probably even seek some professional counseling help to navigate through some stuff you may not even know you're dealing with. You may be having fights and you don't even know why you're having the fights. And it's because of stuff that's in there from the last relationship. You know? So that's what I would say. I would say, no, God's a God of second chances. And I would encourage you in it. I would 100% encourage you in it. But I would want you to know, there's hope for you. But it might take a little more work than someone else. Because that's just the repercussions of not 100% following God's will. Not 100% doing it God's way. It's always more difficult when we try to do it our own way.
When I read this question, what I really thought of was a lot of our family and friends that I know who have been divorced. And some of them are a great example of what God can do through the redemption of your new relationship. Of that, that Christ's love moving through you makes you treat your spouse differently this time around. And so I just want to encourage you, if you are in that place where you've had a previous relationship, previous marriage, and you're thinking about dating again, or you are in a new marriage, that you use that tool that God's given you to show His love. To your spouse and to the people around you who think this, the reason why this question was submitted, because you can show that more than we could ever say it from up here through your actions and that tool, that platform that you have, having been in that situation.
All right, let's keep going. This is a good one. How do I raise kids? This is obviously submitted by a mom. How do I raise kids and please my husband at the same time? Which is more important? Obviously, there's a balance there, and I can't answer this question, so I'm going to let you, because I'm not a mom. I don't know. I don't raise kids.
Well, you do. You do. What did you call this? Super mom to sex goddess. I think that's what he said in one of the sermons.
Yes, I said super mom to sex goddess in a sermon.
Super mom to sex goddess is difficult. But I want to answer the second question first, which is more important, and it is 100% your husband. I feel like it's work for that to happen, especially if you have young kids, and even if your kids were younger and now they're getting older, they still need you a lot, and so they need you for everything, every meal, to go to the bathroom, everything. They need you, and at the end of the day, you're like, I can't give anymore. But with work and planning and even support from your husband, this can be a reality in your marriage every single day. One of the things that I think makes it easier to be a super mom, besides the fact that they need you, is, husbands, listen to this, our kids give us instant gratification.
They do.
You do something nice for them, and they immediately are like, oh, they say, oh, I love you, Mommy. Our 3-year-old currently calls me sweet mama. oh, you're my sweet mama. And it's just so heartwarming, you know? Well, if you get that affirmation from your kids all the time, guess what? It's going to be easier to say, oh, baby, I just want to sit on the couch and hold you instead of, you know, making dinner or thinking about something I could do for Trey.
That's why you got to bring your A game, man. They're the enemy, man. You gotta out-cute your kids. Your kids are super cute, and you got to out-cute them. So, and you're not going to out-cute them. So you got to do other stuff because take those things down. All right, go ahead. No, I really do love my children, I promise.
And he is a great dad. He talks big on the stage, but, you know, they run to the door when he comes in.
They
know.
Do.
Anyway, but one of the things that I really try to do is think about Trey during the day. You know, I think about ways that I could make sure he knows that I care about him. You know, I challenge you if this is like, okay, I see that. I know that I'm okay at being super mom because that's easier to be for a lot of women, mostly because, you know, like I said, they need you. But if you're thinking about how you can do things for your husband and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do, go home today and ask them what two acts of kindness, what two things could I do during a day that would make you know that I love you and I thought about you. You know, is it, I brought something home from work, or, you know, but go home and ask them that question. You might be surprised that you've been thinking, oh, they want to go lay down and take a nap when they get home. No, they want to spend time talking to you or doing something. But ask, go home and ask them, what two things can I do? And that'll help that idea of, I want to be, eventually, sex goddess. I'll get to that part in a minute. But
oh, will you?
Yeah, sort of. But anyway, take that action. To get there.
I threw her off by that. She's going to blush for about an hour. So, mission accomplished. What I would say, ladies, if you're going to ask your husband, what two things can I do? You need to know that simply asking the question, what two things could I do to make you know that you're more important than your kid, than our kids, is going to make him feel more important than the kids. Simply asking the question is fine. Communication. Again, communication. Talk to each other. Just asking the question is going to make him go, wow, he's asking me that question? He cares enough to ask that question? That's fantastic. He's not going to know how to answer it because he doesn't know. But you're starting the conversation. And then a week later, he could be like, oh, I thought of something. I thought of something. Something happened the other day and I thought of it. So open the dialogue. Have an honest conversation about these things. Husbands, if you want to do this, you got to follow Solomon's example, like we talked about a few weeks ago. He saw this happening with his wife, and he took it upon himself to help her in the process. All right? She was, you know, trying to be the supermom. He's going to help. Wash some dishes. Give some baths. Put the kids to bed. Take some of the weight off of her so that she has time to think about you. One of the reasons she doesn't think about you, not because she doesn't love you, is because she doesn't have time to breathe. Right? So that's our job, men, to be her shade, to be her protection. Now, other side of that, communication, men, I'm going to challenge you as well. If you're holding up your end of the bargain, if you are, if you're not, shut your mouth. But if you are, if you're really helping, and you guys have some communications, we've done this from time to time. I have gone to her from time to time and said, I just need you to know this week, I'm not feeling very important to you. And I know you're like, man, you're a girl. I can't believe you'd say that. Or you would say, how did she not smack you? And see, sometimes in marriage and in conversations like that, you say things like that. Because since she and I both know ending this is not an option, like it ain't happening, we are together for life, there is a freedom for me to express to her how I really feel. There's a freedom for her to express how she really feels. Now, you should know, when I said that to her, the next sentence was, what can I take off your plate to make this easier for you? Because I love her enough, I know she wants to do it. I know if she's not, it's because other stuff's going on. I give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, I do. I didn't always. That's something I had to learn. That's a hard thing for me to do. But I've learned that. And so if you have that open communication, it just makes everything so much easier. There should not be a topic you can't discuss as a married couple. But I would say, if you don't talk a lot right now, husbands, the first thing you say shouldn't be, you don't make me feel very important. Don't do that. First thing you should say is, teach me how to wash some clothes, and I'll help you. You know, you got to start the dialogue slowly.
One more thing I wanted to add to this, because it is Super Mom, Sex Goddess, and although it's difficult for me to talk about from this platform, if we went to lunch together, girlfriends, then I would talk to you about it. And so I just have to say that it's okay for you to think about, you know, one special time you're going to have with your spouse later, your time alone. If you're making PB&Js and you're folding clothes and all you can think about is all you have to do, you know, be like, oh, man, I need to change that thought process and think about my husband. Because if not, and it's 9 o'clock, and you're like, oh, man, that's somebody else that needs my time. As opposed to, I've been thinking about this at 3 p.m. I can't wait to spend some time with you. So really, you know, take that. It's okay to think about. You get my drift. You know what I'm saying. So anyway. We ran out of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to skip the next question, so don't put it up. Go to how can a wife express. That's the one we're going to go to next. Thank you. Next question, because we've got to wrap up. We're out of time. This is a big one, though, so I wanted to get this one. How can a wife express anger or unhappiness about her husband without him thinking she's being disrespectful? Right? Because we've been talking about this all series, that one of the biggest things husbands need is they need to feel, you know, respected by their spouses. We've been talking about submit. Okay? But how do we deal with the very real reality of you're going to fight? A husband is going to make a mistake. You are going to get mad at him. Justly, by the way. I'm not saying unjustly. But so how do you deal with that? How do you handle that balance of I'm angry with you. I'm mad at you. I want to yell at you. But the Bible tells me to respect you. But right now I just want to hit you with a frying pan. Number one, don't use a frying pan. Honestly, what I would say to do, and then I'm going to let her answer because she's better. But first thing I would say is in a happy moment, like maybe this afternoon if you're out by the beach or whatever and things are good and happy, ask that question. Ask your husband. Hey, dummy, how do you want me to tell you when you do something dumb? Probably not the best way to say it. I'm just being straight here. But ask him the question, and husbands, be honest. What's the best way we can talk about this? You know, when you disagree with me on something or when you're mad at me, how can we discuss this in a way that we're going to keep the principles we want of you feeling safe and you feeling secure, you know, is we keep those principles, but have a real conversation, not be like the Brady Bunch, you know? I mean, you could get to a point where you just don't ever talk about anything, and you bottle it all up. You got to talk about stuff. So that's what I would encourage you to do is in a happy moment, say, hey, what's the best place for us to talk about things when we disagree? And then stick to that, right? For some people, let's deal with it right then. For some people, let's wait till the kids go to bed and we'll sit down and have a conversation. You know, and sometimes you're just going to fight and you're just going to start yelling. And the biggest thing there is whenever the first one of you realizes this is wrong, we need to stop, because both of you realize that about 5 minutes before you stop the fight, in the head you said, we shouldn't be fighting, but you keep doing it. When that hits there, just say, hey, time out, we're going to stop this. This is silly. Whoever, no matter who's wrong, no matter who's right, that doesn't matter. Like I said 2 weeks ago, making it right, much more important than being right. Always. Reconciliation over vindication. So, but that's what I would say. What do you?
I think that, you know, the bigger deal here is the issue, the heart issue of the anger that you're feeling. Like when I read this question, I immediately thought of James 1:19, which says you should be quick to listen, slow to speak, yeah, slow to be angry. That will do wonders for you, your communication and your marriage. if you are quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Because if you really sit back and you think before you explode, anytime I'm really mad at him, 60% of it is my reaction to something I think he's done. You know, it's my...
It's usually me. That's not true.
But either I've bottled it up or something like that, you know. So most of the time, I've assumed that he knew something. Or I assumed I communicated something to him that he didn't get. You know, it's more often, you know, something that doesn't have to be a huge fight. But that anger that you have and you store up and you stew with because you don't want to reflect on, well, geez, what am I bringing to this? Because if you get in a fight, if you're there, you both are going to have weight in it. If you let it get to that point, that anger there is significant on both of you if you let it get there. So, again, communication. Talk to each other before it gets there. And reflect on your heart before you go to blame. That was big deal in us learning how to talk things out.
Well, you're noticing some recurring themes here. Communication, making sure your heart's right with God, seeking to serve the other person. You know, you do those things, things are going to be pretty solid. Last one, because you guys are freaks. I can't believe you asked this question. What is normal in terms of how often you should have sex? This was I guarantee you, this resulted from a fight of a husband and a wife on the way to church, and the husband was like, I'll show you. I'll ask the pastor. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not answering that question for you. We decided to look around, and I was like, where better than Google? And so I had Eric, really, imagine typing that question into Google. So what I did is I was like, Eric, and we were at a staff meeting. I made Eric and TJ stand over the computer with me as I typed it. I was like, watch, I am typing this. Enter. We all see what happens. An article by Dr. Oz came up. Y'all know Dr. Oz, right? I thought the guy was a crazy person until this. Dr. Oz says for maximum health, for maximum health benefits, 200 times per year. Yeah, everybody's doing the math. What does that mean? What does that mean? That's what he says, four times a week. But, you know, that's really a joke. I'm not going to tell you to do that unless you want to do that and have fun. Truthfully, normal is a very relative term. It's, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to come into it. How many kids do you have? How old are the kids? Does the husband work late? What's the wife's work schedule like? How old are you? There's a lot of different things. So, again, what I would encourage you to do is to communicate about it. Here's what I suggest you do. Pretend like you're at a car dealership, all right? I want you both to sit down at the table when you get home, take out a sheet of paper, and write down your number for what your goal would be for a week, what you think an average week should be. You write down the number, you fold it, you slide it across the table. They'll pick up your number. Husbands, the wives will pick up your number. They'll laugh. And you say, ha, 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 ha. And they'll cross it out. No, I'm just kidding. No, don't do it that way. But seriously, I do think it'll be kind of fun. Sit down. Husbands, you write down a number. Why? And not a crazy number. Don't be silly. But you have to talk about this because you never know. You may be feeling guilty. And they're like, no, I think it's, you know, we have it a number of times a week. It's perfect. It's you know. You've got to talk about this stuff so I don't have to anymore. Please. But seriously, write down your number. Each of you, slide it across the table, look at it, be like, okay, let's discuss this. What it can't turn into is a negotiation, though. You know, I'll give you one more night if you give me dishes 3 days a week. That is bad. You have crossed a line. So, but truthfully, all the Bible says about it is that it should be regular. And again, I point you back to the verse I read a few weeks ago. If you're not regularly, you know, allowing that part of your marriage to be the way God wants it to be, you're opening the door for temptation in your marriage. You are opening it wide, you know, crazy. Now, some of you take the word regular, you're like, well, I regularly visit my dentist, and I see him twice a year. So that's regular. No, that is not regular. Talk about it. Sit down with each other. Discuss that. You know, discuss all these things. I encourage you to talk to your spouses more. Turn the television off. Talk to them. You used to. At some point, you were that giddy person that couldn't wait for them to call you, and you talked on the phone for hours, and you do the whole, no, you hang up. No, you hang up. You know, you used to do that. You did. Talk to them. You know, they're great people. And a lot of these things, man, just you can work through it. So I'm gonna close this now. We're gonna go on the next part of the service. But I've really enjoyed this. I'm glad you guys allowed us to do this. I hope it blessed you. Kind of work through some of the things. Well, didn't she do good? Didn't she do great?
It was fun.
She was so nervous.
This time I wasn't.
Yeah, I knew. But I'm talking about for the last 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, I wanted to throw up for the last 2 weeks every time. Not the topic, just the stage. But y'all are nice. I wasn't, you know. And you stayed awake. That was my biggest fear. I was like, they're gonna be falling asleep while we're talking, you know.
Yeah, you're right. They did. All right, guys. I love you. Let's pray, and we'll move on. God, we thank you so much for we got to just kind of take things down today, and you know, kind of answer some questions some people had about this thing called marriage. Father, I pray for every single marriage in the room that you will continue to build it, continue to make yourself the center of it, continue to draw people in, Father, develop them, grow them, let them see that it is worth it to fight for your plan. Gene and Amy pray.